up, long players? Welcome to the Long Play Listening Party, the show where we go deep on local music, writing, recording, inspiration, gear, and whatever else sounds good to us. I'm Howie Howard from Mr. Furious Records. We've got the whole crew here. Nate, what's up?
What's up, everyone?
Royce Diamond, how are you?
I am doing great.
Excellent. And welcome, Christina and Brandon Graves, here to talk about Christina's brand new record, Finding My Footing. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Hey, so would you each kind of give a 60-second overview maybe, or how you got into music, where you started, where you've been, and what brought you to the point of recording Finding My Footing? Christina?
Okay. Well, I started playing in college some in a little band, and I was in Springfield, Missouri, but we would play in Kansas City at a place called New Earth Coffee House once in a while. And one night while playing there, I met this guy, Brandon.
That's me.
And yeah, that was it. And we started dating and got married pretty quick, actually. And he was in a band named Waterdeep at that time, and they were just starting to play more. And so after we got married, I toured with them. I opened doing solo stuff. And then eventually I joined the band. And I did that until my first little baby came along. And I tried to do one tour when he was 5 months old, and it was like hell. So yeah. I was like, hey, I'm out of this. So yeah. Brandon kept touring some, and just over the years, I kind of just paused. I kept writing my own stuff, but I kind of paused on playing. And it's really just been the last few years that I've started playing again. I play some at my church. I've been playing for years, but I think about 2 years ago or so, I started doing this thing in Weston once a month, just doing covers and my own stuff at
O'Malley's,
and that was kind of like my thing, just to start playing again. So that happened, and then I had this collection of songs, and when lockdown happened, we were like, hey, we have a lot of time, and a friend of ours had just moved back to Kansas City, Greg LaFollette, I call him, but LaFollette.
Yeah, Greg LaFollette.
LaFollette, sorry. And
it's a mouthful.
And so he was happy to help, and that's how it started.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that story's basically the same for both of us. I'm a drummer by trade, and knew that I wanted to play drums, and I wanted that to be my job when I was in high school. And so I put all my eggs in that basket, you know, practiced all the time. And so once I got in a band, I was like, there was no looking back. And when the band stopped touring, I was a booking agent for a little while, and then was miserable, so I stopped doing that. I love relationships, but I found it particularly challenging to be excited about artists in some cases when I wasn't excited about the artist, you know? And you don't want a booking agent that doesn't absolutely love, you know, what he does and every band that he represents.
Right.
And so I stepped out of that and started teaching privately. Built a private studio in Olathe, and so I have private teaching studio, and then I also co-manage the recording studio at the Culture House where I teach with Greg, who's the guy that produced the record, and so we run that room, and which is fantastic room. Beautiful. I mean, if you've heard the record, you can hear the room on the record. But yeah, so that brought us to, we went past 60 seconds on that. But
I was going to ask what the room was called, or did you say what it was called?
It's just the recording studio at the Culture House.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's where we tracked the record. And it was in July that we started.
You did the whole record in July?
More or less. It took.
Yeah. I think I was doing vocals some in August, but.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, we kind of set a timeline for to try to get things done before Christmas, but it, you know how it goes. It didn't work out that way. So, but yeah. That's kind of
very cool. And the writing process, here comes some music.
Yeah.
Let's actually listen for a second. And then Christina, I want to hear the songs that made the record, you know, what was the time frame? Let's listen a little bit.
Stir with a pinprick, let the galaxies collide. When the dust settles thick, I'll see where I stand. I never wanted all crazy. I never thought I'd get wrapped up. I always thought the river rushed in a straight line before me.
Skeleton for everything. Also, all these wonderful rhythmic details, sonic details, very impeccably produced.
A lot of the kind of melodic things that are happening, like right now, just that melody in the background.
Mm-hmm.
The sound, I don't know. It's a percussion instrument, I'm guessing, like a xylophone. Yeah,
it's a xylophone, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of stuff is all throughout, like just little details that happen accent moments like that are super cool. And so, you know, we have the whole record to talk about it, but like one of the things, you know, I wanted to bring up was that and kind of how you guys decided to do that, if that was just... I don't know, like if you recorded all the songs and you went back and you're like, okay, now we need to produce it, or if those were just kind of natural things that were, you know, there, you know, through the process of writing the songs and you just put them in.
Sometimes we heard things, because when I play live, we have strings, we have a cello and a violin player, and so we have parts that they play that I've heard, hear as I'm writing or after I've written the song, like brainstorming, and Brandon is really good at coming up with those melodies. So some of it were things that we had in mind, and then Greg is just a wizard with like the little perfect things that come in the second verse, and really good with layering his vocals and...
Yeah.
The
background vocals and just some of the ways that they, you know, they're all good, but they're, you know, just placed differently, or they gave a different vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool.
Well, this section right here, the end of the bridge, I wrote the string melody that's playing underneath all of that.
Okay.
And then so we actually tracked that melody at a previous session and then lifted it and tempo adjusted it and dropped it into this tune. Because we love the performance from the string players and we got good tones, and the tempo wasn't that big of an adjustment. And then we tracked over the top of it more cello. And then kind of like, you know, like just co-created with Audrey and Greg while she was tracking the cello stuff. And then John our guitar player, Flynn. Do you guys know Isaac Flynn from Hembry?
I know who he is. We don't know each other, you know, on a personal level, but yeah.
So Isaac's dad used to play with me in the band that I was in, you know, 25 years ago, and Isaac used to come see us play when he was like a foot and a half tall, you know, standing on the side of the stage watching me play drums, you know, and so, anyways, John and his wife Jamie have been close friends of ours for decades, and he plays guitar in the band, but Greg is also a great guitar player too, our producer, and so. You know, we brought John in because he just does that, like, thing that he does on that solo so well and creates melodies. And he and Greg worked through everything meticulously to get all the layers right in the bridge so that when we got to the guitar solo at the end and the vocals and the harmonies dropped out, we didn't feel anything fall away, but it kind of lifts.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It was a really cool, just climactic moment of that song. And it felt big. And then, went right back down. It's very, very cool. Effective emotionally. And your heart was
breaking. Your heart was. Is there a chance one of the speakers are on in one of your studios? Because we're getting a double.
Oh, that's probably me.
Okay.
Royce is guilty of that.
Yeah, Royce likes to move some air.
Do you want to talk about this song a little bit?
So I usually write my stuff like just when I'm processing something. And this one came when we lost Brandon's mom kind of suddenly. And it was just so sad. And watching him, just the weight of it, and that's where this came from.
The lyrics on this record are really, they're very direct, they're very raw emotionally, they're very honest, and that's an easy thing. It can be easy to fall into cliche when trying to be direct, and you absolutely do not do that. You walk this amazing line of openness with the lyrics, openness and freshness combined, which is really unique, I think.
Thank you.
These backgrounds are amazing, and I assume these are actually being sung, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, that, like, when I heard those the first time, I was like, that's so, like, yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's and, a... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and just in general, the textures and the layering, especially with some of the strings, and then... those chimes, I'm assuming like a xylophone again, maybe piano, the layering of like the melodies and then just the harmonic stuff underneath on that song is
awesome.
Really enjoyed that.
It was kind of funny, we went back and forth with Greg on it because he's a great singer-songwriter himself, and we've been friends for I think 20 years or so, and he lived in Nashville for 10 and was producing and writing and getting placements and all that kind of stuff, and then decided he just wanted to be back in Kansas City, and so we're working together on the stuff, and you know, like he'd have a day where he's like, "I'm gonna work on background vocals today. You guys don't need to come in if you don't want to." And we'd show up the next day, and there would just be this stuff like that we'd never thought of, never heard before. You know what I mean? Right. And so we had, there was kind of a joke about that tune in particular, because it was like, I was like, "Man, we love those vocals, but I'm not sure if she's got the Temptations back in her." You know, like, let's, because it's very like Motown feeling to me, yeah. You know? And I was like, can we spice it in just the right way? And so it was really fun to have, I mean, you guys know when you produce records, you have sparring matches all the time about things, yeah. and it's all good natured to get the best product, you know? And so it was fun to like give each other limitations at times and say, yes, but not that much. How about if we figure out where to put it so that it means more at the right time and all that sort of stuff?
If you put something in like once versus having it, you know, four or five times, that it's more effective that way sometimes.
Totally.
I was going to say that, like, when things were dropping out and you could actually hear those, that vocal, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. those background vocals, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
that's a really, really cool background vocal part, but it's super effective because that's really the main time that you can hear that.
Right.
When we had I have done a fair amount of session work as a drummer, and Greg kind of like learned his studio chops working in the same studio that we now co-run before he went to Nashville, working with one of my best friends, Don Chaffer, who was the front man for the band that I was in back then. And so Greg was Don's assistant for a number of years. They moved to Nashville together, and then Greg went out on his own once he got to Nashville before he came back. And the relationship that Don and Greg and I have when we would make records together is really, really a fun dynamic, because they always give, you know, like the like in comedy or whatever, you have the yes and idea where you're like, yes, and they do that to me all the time while I'm tracking. So I'll lay it down and it'll be a pretty good take. And I'll be like, all right, should we go back and grab like the verse, the chorus? And he'll be like, maybe, but what if you do this? You know? And I'm trying to think where, coming up on the record, where there's an example of that, but definitely the drum groove in Heart Was Breaking, which is the second track, or Breaking In Two, which is the second track. It used to be called Heart Was Breaking, and we changed the title. So anyways, we had these times throughout the record, which when we get to Home, we can talk about it there, which is the next to last song, but where we would continually modify the idea, and I would end up doing, you know, 6, 7, 8 takes of the song, and then like picking apart each one and finding our favorite moments and comping the drum pass, much like you would comp a vocal.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so it ended up being really fun to do that, and I did that with Don back in the day when he was here. And so Greg and I just picked up that same kind of mojo in the studio when we started working together. And it's really fun because he pushes me, like, to, like, that's cool, but what else, you know? Like, what else can you do? What if you put the tom on, you know, like right there, where I replace the snare drum with those two tom hits, you know? So those little things I love doing in the studio, where we really get to nerd out about placement and individual tone, how hard I'm hitting the drums. Like here, I'm hardly playing. It's super soft.
And expanding on that a little bit is, I think there's three singles that were released that I kind of get the sense that the drums are more or less, you know, similarly mixed or played, or the tones of the drums are, you know, kind of familiar throughout the three songs. But I noticed that, like, throughout the rest of the record, like, you do treat the drums differently, and I don't know if that's through, you know, picking out different snares or toms or kicks, or, you know, changing up the set a little bit, or if it's, you know, just the way that you're mixing them, the way that you're playing them, or whatever it is.
Oh, he's got a lot of stuff.
which is not uncommon, and it's a fun thing to do to kind of, you know, change the vibe of a song or give it the vibe that it needs. But I noticed that, and it makes listening throughout the record, you know, much like just really like cooler, just because it's you know, not hearing, you know. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having a consistent, like, you know, drum sound, but I can tell you guys took your time and I think thought a lot about how you wanted the song as a whole to come across, which is which is really cool.
Well, and there was a lot of, which I don't want to pass up an opportunity to talk about a moment that's coming up on the reprise of this tune in between this and the next tune with her vocals, to kind of wrap up.
Can I say real quick, though, too, just before I forget, like some of the production on this stuff and in this song particularly, but in the other parts of other songs, that kind of reminds me of the Golden Hour record that Cook Casey Musgraves put out. It's just got really cool choices as far as, you know, stuff that's in the background and melodies and harmonies and stuff. And that's another thing I really, really enjoyed about this record was there's just not your, you know, it's you're singing and playing acoustic guitar and the songs probably come out of that, but just the, you know, willingness to go out and find, you know, unique and stuff that you wouldn't necessarily expect to find in those types of songs.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's, well, I mean, you guys know as artists when you like, when you dump everything you've got into trying to make each song special. And even in this case, we went into the process with 14 songs and we cut 10. And, we cut four off, but we kept 10. But anyways, yeah, so it's good that it to feel like somebody hears that.
Yeah.
So this, can we listen to this moment right
here? Yeah, of course.
You know, knowing her voice for as long as I've known it, having been married now for 25 years almost, I knew that there were elements of what she did that I really wanted them to capture. And so do you want to kind of like share a little bit about what he had you do on that section?
Just sing out. I just stood in there in the dark and reacted. Yeah.
And so then Greg had a number of takes of her doing those vocal swells that are in that outro. And lots of them were really moving. And I was like, oh man, we've got to build an outro at the end of this where that can be the featured moment. And originally,
I was just saying, it does give you a little bit of chills. Like it's definitely emotional.
Mm-hmm. And what did that feel like, Christina, to record in a different way?
Well, this whole process was really great because Greg was really like, I can just get in my head and then not, like, I can just sing. I'm a pretty precise singer. I can give you a good part, you know, but he was like, no, we need candles. We're going to make it really dark. It's burning incense. We're going to, like, make it really moody and make you feel comfortable. So, yeah, it was very fun. And no one around. He was in the other room. And so I felt really comfortable. So it was a really good experience. Yeah. Now that you're gone.
And yeah. Did you play piano too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have a beautiful piano in there and it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you have to record it.
Yeah. Well, in some of the songs, only a few of them were written on piano. I usually write on guitar. But then I, like this one, I sat down and I started playing that little figure at the top, you know? And he was like,
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, that's it. That's what we're going to do. And I was like, oh, okay. So, yeah. Yeah, and I was happy. I mean, I always hear more when I'm writing my songs, but I just play them on acoustic because I'm usually sitting in my bedroom when I write, and that's the easiest thing. But I always hear a lot of these things happening, you know, I envision them, but yeah.
So, like, I'm a piano player as well, and so when you're saying you hear a lot of the things when you're writing the songs, like, is it hard for you to kind of simplify it and break it down to where, like, in the beginning of that, those figures, like, some of those voicings and stuff are really cool? I don't know if you consciously thought about how you were playing that, or if you were just kind of sitting and playing it and it sounded good and you just kind of went with it, because it the
maybe
voicings
a little
and
both maybe yeah. Yeah, I mean, a little of both. I usually want to I haven't played piano. I grew up playing piano and then played in college, but that's what I did in Waterdeep. I played keyboard stuff, but when I quit the band, I kind of just didn't. Guitar is so much, and grabbing my acoustic is so much easier. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of have not played a whole lot, but I usually just want, I want sparse voicing so we can fill it in.
Fill around it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those the binding voicing, this is one of the cooler things, and sometimes can be the frustrating thing, because you sometimes kind of want to add things that sound really cool and might be mm-hmm. rich, but then, you know, in the context of the rest of everything's going on, like, you need to simplify it.
Right.
Let something else, like, play that note that you really like in that chord.
Right, like, yeah. Like that piano sounds so good, so I kept, like, going down, you know, yeah. What I mean? Playing all it, and I'm like, oh, we don't need more of that.
We don't need more bass. Yeah.
We don't need more bass, but yeah.
Let's hear some music, and then Royce, I want to ask you, you know, how this is sitting you, because I don't think you've heard it before, so let's give it 30 seconds and then jump in. That means anything. Your words keep coming, I know they mean something. Give me a minute to think this through. Your words keep coming, my mind is spinning. I'm holding on tight, I wanna get this right. Pardon me, but I was just now, in my thoughts just now, and they don't.
I love that run there.
Mean anything. I'm so sorry. This is, you almost hear a little bit of that Motown influence again here.
Yeah.
Oh, I hear that.
Doesn't mean anything. The words keep coming, I know. Keep coming, my mind is spinning. I'm holding on tight, I wanna get this right.
is it if we don't hear? What is it? What is it? What is it if we don't hear? What is it?
So I'll tell you what's going in through my head, and I'm just going to throw it all out there because I've been sitting here holding it. So the first thing that grabbed me immediately from the very first song was the lyrics. And that kind of, like, I just didn't even pay attention to anything else because I was listening to the lyrics. I write a lot. And sometimes when I'm writing, I get to that moment where it's like, oh my God, shit just got real. You know what I mean? And it's like uncomfortable and like all that kind of stuff. And that's immediately what I felt from the beginning of this record. And I've just been in that, like, that kind of space. But the thing that I like to geek out about is like, what do your sessions look like? What do you, like, I want to know how things are happening, what's physically going on, and how you organize all that.
From the engineering standpoint?
Yeah, so like you were talking about comping your drums. I mean, are you using, what program are you in?
Pro Tools.
You're in Pro Tools, so you're using like folders to comp your drums. Like, how are you physically?
He's doing playlists.
Okay.
And then he'll make a, we'll pick things. And it's one of the benefits of working with Greg. He's like laser lightning fast in Pro Tools. And so he can put a drum comp together like before I like have gotten back from the restroom, you know, and it's like,
wow.
And it's like, what the heck, you know? And so, you know, like I mentioned, he was in Nashville for 10 years and you just have to be fast to work there. And so I think that's probably one of the benefits is that we would look through and listen through a take and grab, you know, grab fills and copy and paste them and lift them in. And of course I track to a click so that all that stuff syncs together better. But yeah, I mean, it was, there were a lot of, I mean, we ran 13 channels just for drums in order to get options, you know?
Yeah.
But then we did, you know, we did guitar stuff in the control room, and he runs through, I don't know which plugin it is, but he's got a couple guitar plugins that he likes.
And then simulators.
Yeah. And then when John came in, he obviously brought his rig and, you know, to do all the lead stuff. So they're pretty, you know, big sessions, a lot of tracks and a lot of stuff going on. And I don't know about the folder side of things because I'm not the engineer. I mean, I
got you.
I know a little bit, but, you know, we have some nice pre's, we have some nice mics and not a ton of gear, but we have enough to do the work, to make it sound good. And,
well, and the room,
yeah.
The one big room sounds so good for voice and piano, and.
What's that room like?
It's, you know, I can give dimensions. Yeah. I think it's like 35 feet long, 18 feet high at the peak, and then like probably 16 or so feet wide, and it's kind of trapezoidal shape, you know. But it's big enough that we've got a grand Yamaha grand in there, a drum kit, a B3, Leslie cab, and then
I thought you said you didn't have all the gear.
Well, we have keyboard player's paradise, but you know, but, you know, like our mic closet is not as big as other people's, you know. You know, I think we have like 18 or so, you know, analog pre's that we can run into Pro Tools, APIs, Vintex, and ADM, something else, but I can't remember.
Well, the proof is in the music, and it sounds like $1 million, so whatever you've got.
Yeah. Is that wood? The floor is wood in that room?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Even the wind will blow against the mountain side. Even the
There's little melodic lines on the on those accents, or. Mm-hmm. Yes. So good.
And that's Melissa singing harmony there. Melissa Mayhew, if you're a townie and you know the Mayhew family.
I was in a couple bands with Lauren.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think Melissa sang with us one or two times as well.
Yeah. I've
got to steady my pace. So this one we had written all the string staff before, because we've been playing this one live for a while. So
you said your live band, if you remember the concept of live bands.
I know.
you had how many string players, one or two?
Two, violin and cello.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes she would play viola. And then
I don't think so. I think it was just violin.
She did.
Did she?
Yeah.
Let's fight about it.
And then Melissa, same background. And then we have bass, John on guitar, Brandon. And then I play acoustic live. And I think now, post-record, I think we're going to try to get a keyboard.
Yeah, I think you're going to need a piano on stage now. Yeah, this is a beautiful solo by John.
Yeah.
Christina, talking about the live band reminded me, I wanted to ask, you've got 10 songs here. You had a long period of writing. Were they written kind of scattered throughout that period, or are they more recent, or how did you?
There are a few that are pretty old. Today was an older one. Maybe 10 years old or 9. That was kind of the result. We had a close friend commit suicide, and it was just, that was kind of... I could see it in your eyes. Then his mom. I mean, it was kind of like a culmination. It had brought me to that. But, so that was a pretty old song.
I think that's the oldest one, because I think the other ones were the ones that we cut.
Yeah, this one was new. This one I actually played by myself the last time we played, which was the night before shut. Like, we played at Lucia in Lawrence on Friday night before they shut everything down on Saturday.
March 13th.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And we were hearing about it. And so when I started it, I was like, this is because I'm going to wait this out. No. No. But this one's a new one.
So in January, I bought a banjo a year ago, and now I'm just like, I'm not good at it at all, but I played it on this song, like, right here. Yeah, I waited
out for the storm to come. I'm buying it.
All you need.
Yeah. That's a new variation on the drummer picks up guitar cliche.
Yeah, it is.
I say that as a drummer who picked up the guitar.
Right on. So that big, colossal, ooshy backbeat that you hear in there, that goes... Just for the sound nerds, it's a 22-inch Wuhan China sitting on top of a temple. And I Greg mic'd it from halfway across the room up in the air. And I'm hitting it with a mallet. And so in the room, it was heinous. Like,
yeah.
You know,
this is great.
Loud, distorted thing, but pushed way back and slathered reverb. It was the, like, underwater snare drum.
So back to, again, just some of the things that you do with those little elements, the ear candy, the things that are just giving it vibe and
life,
you know, life, and the things that you may not notice, you know, when you're listening to it the first time, but you know, when you go back and hear you like, oh wow, that's really cool, I didn't notice that before.
I think, was there, this is the next to last song, I don't have the title in front of me, was there a story about this one?
Home.
Yeah. Well, there's the, I mean, there, it, this was kind of the most important song for me.
Yeah, I think this was, for me, this was my favorite song on the record. And I had started writing this several years ago, and then I finished it during quarantine. But it was, and partly because, what was it, 3-4 years ago, Brandon had a heart attack. It was so bizarre.
Oh, wow.
It was such a shakeup for us out of nowhere, you know? And it's just one of those surreal times where when I think back on it, it feels like dream. You know what I mean? It just feels... But all the people coming up, and people don't know what to say, you know? Like, but just... You know, oh, it could have been worse, it could, whatever, all these things. And they're trying to be helpful, but I'm just standing there like, stop, I just want to go home. And that's literally what, you know.
And process it, like, in your way. And
And so I think when, for quarantine, too, it's just been such a stressful time for everybody. And the irony is no one wants to be home, but at the same time, I just want to be safe, right? Like somewhere safe. So I finished it during quarantine, even though we were stuck at home. But...
The bridge of this song was a really, it's the thickest moment on the record. And it immediately is followed by arguably one of the thinnest moments of the record. Maybe we can listen to it when we get there. But there's a lot of, there's a lot of polyrhythm stuff happening in the strings that was really fun to do, where you've got multiple time feels going on, and the drums are that way too. So here comes the bridge.
You made a contrast in the drums as well, I think, between those two parts.
Wanna go. Yeah, the snare totally changes. And I mean, there's two snares during the big part. There's like an orchestral one and then the kit one. And then there's like a piccolo snare in the little outro.
Yeah, that's the main snare throughout the whole beginning of the song, too.
Okay, so it comes back.
And it comes back, and then we went with a bigger option during the during the bridge.
And the city closes.
And this one's just you and John on your acoustics.
This is a song that I actually wrote on piano. And it was one of the only songs that I wrote on piano. Mm-hmm. And so we had already, like, we had kind of been saving this. Like, I wanted to do this song, but I imagined it very let's go produced. And mm-hmm. and so I sat down, and Greg was like, well, play it for me. And so I sat down with my acoustic, I don't know why, and I played it just like this. And he was like, well, I think we'll just do that. I think we're just going to do it like that. And so, I mean, this is pretty much live. He just had me play it about 3 times in a row, and I didn't play to a click, and yeah. So my one piano song is not a piano song. Yeah,
it's a great tune, and I appreciate the sequencing a lot too, because, like, you mm-hmm. could have ended with Home, right?
Yeah.
And when I listened to this album for the first time, I listened to, when I got to Home, I felt what Royce was talking about. It was just like, oh man, this is very real emotionally. Mm-hmm. And it got huge, and I really appreciate the, like, bringing it back in, bringing it back close and intimate, and I really like the choice to end the record here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lights go out and the city closes.
And I do like when artists do this, when they'll end a record with something that just brings everything back to, like, what brings them there, or, you know, what brought the record around in the first place was just, you know, them writing songs and went through all of this process to flesh them out. But you're just reminding people, hey, like, this is, you know, this is a song that I wrote, and I don't need anything else. It's just me and my instrument.
These are the type of songs I feel like, at least when I was performing, I always had a song that if I was losing them, you know, like, I'll just stop all the noise and go to, like, my quiet, like, this is the one that shows you I'm an artist delivering you a message, you know, and then we can get back into the smoke and mirrors and all that crap, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what this song feels like to me. When the lights go out and the city closes,
shut the door, turn out.
So sequencing wise, we're doing a vinyl for this.
Oh, nice.
And we had to shuffle 2 songs in order to get the order to work for pressing the vinyl. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like, it worked out, because it was like the 3rd track and the 7th track. We just flipped them. I was really, it was super important to me to get the first side to end. Because the first side of a record, to me, always feels like that's the moment, like, where you have to decide, am I in for another side? You know? And if the end of the first side has got me in the zone, then I'm flipping that record and I'm going for that second side, you know? And so the end of the first side ends with Come On into that outro, into Today. And so it's got this super melancholy thing. And then the second side starts with Give Me a Minute, which is, like, probably the most poppy tune, the R&B vibe, you know? Mm-hmm. And then that allows the record to end with Home and City Closes. And so I was really happy with not only the layout for if you're listening to it digitally, but if you get the vinyl, it's, the sides work really well together. It was my hope, you know?
Good job.
Yeah, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but that almost, it worked out kind of like the Springsteen, the Four Corners sequencing philosophy of like bangers to open and kind of downers to close sides.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny, I always think too, being a child of the 80s, the power ballads were always track three on side one. And so like, you know, like I was like, for all the 80s metal bands, you know, and so that seemed to be lingering in my head too. I was like, we have to make
Isn't
sure.
Isn't there
like,
a technical reason too, though, for, I think maybe you were telling me this, Howie, you know, on for like the last song or last couple of songs on a record to be a little quieter just because of the way that, just because of the medium, like you don't want.
Right. There's less bandwidth and more distortion as you move toward the center of the physical record. So it makes sense to have a sparser tune at the end of a side.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, the bass response is much better on the outside of the record than it is on the inside as well. It's better nowadays than it was, you know, back in the 70s or whatever. But
right.
Yeah.
It still applies.
Yeah.
It's for the listeners, I mean, it's because if you think about the record spinning at a consistent speed for a given time frame, like a second. And I'm going to make up numbers here, but, you know, take a second. The record on the outside, it might travel 3 or 4 inches past the needle in that 1 second. But as you get toward the inside of the record, there's less and less distance traveling past the needle as the record spins for any given unit of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why those half-speed master double-disc 180-gram records are the way to go. Because you get all your content on the outside of the record at a slower mastering rate, and then you get a much better audio quality.
Hmm. Yeah, I did not know that. Thank you.
whenever we can match Royce's nerd level on anything, that's a good day. That means we're deep in it.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a. Really enjoyed that record. I obviously we have the music bed we just listened to, and I have the singles, but I'll be very interested in having the finished product and being able to see like the artwork and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the vinyl
sounds interesting,
yeah,
as well.
For sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Let's Christina and Brandon, let's talk about the release plan. We're recording a little bit ahead of the release. The record will be out by the time people hear this. Where can they get it? Where can they stream it? Where can they find, you know, connect with you online or social media?
We're at, we were laughing about this the other day because this is my job because she doesn't like this part.
we all,
do you guys, I don't, so yeah. Do yeah, you watch, have you watched Community? Anybody?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. There's this one episode. I don't even remember the background for it, but they were like, what's her name?
Britta.
Britta like, don't worry, guys, I'll look it up. And like, she's typing with two fingers, like, bip, 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 bip. And I was like, that is me. That is me. Like, she carries the tape Walkman member. That is me.
Yeah.
I'm.
So the.
My heart is in it, but. I'm not really interested
like
enough to learn.
Yeah, we were at, so the Instagram page is Christina Graves Music, and I launched it about a year ago, and we were at rehearsal one night, and since you guys, one of you know Melissa, and I was like, hey guys, I launched our Instagram page for the band, just so you know, and Christina hasn't been doing any of the posting, and she won't be. I'll be handling the posting. And Melissa goes, yeah, no one here thought she was going to be doing any of the posting. but anyway, so it's all Christina Graves Music. So ChristinaGravesMusic.com, Christina Graves Music on Facebook, Christina Graves Music on Instagram. And so we did an Indiegogo campaign, basically out of nowhere, like we had 3 months of gigging in Lawrence before we launched it. So, I mean, we still don't, there's not a whole lot of people paying attention to our social stuff. And so, we're, you know, we're we sent out a, you know, did all the Indiegogo stuff on Facebook and all that sort of stuff. And then the Don and Lori, the couple that we were in Waterdeep with, have a gigantic mailing list that's from back in the day. So they sent out an email for us to their fan base, and they crowdfund all of their projects now from Nashville. And so we were able to get enough money to do vinyl, CDs, T-shirts, stickers.
Nice.
And some like prints, artwork prints, like the covers for the singles. We turned into frameable prints. And so that's all actually shipping this week because the record drops on Friday night. Or I guess it'll be midnight on Thursday night. But so that's done, and then the web store for the record will be up before long too. So now that we're past the crowdfunding, people can buy it if they want to. The vinyl won't be out until April, but we had for the vinyl nerds out there, we hired Kevin Gray to master it, and he's done he did the 30th anniversary reissue of Dark Side of the Moon for Pink Floyd. He's done Norah Jones and mastered a ton of new, like re-releases of classic jazz records and Wayne Shorter and John Coltrane and Prince. So he's like a guy in LA that I had mastered another record that I played on a couple years ago, and so I knew I wanted to use him. Yeah. We just wanted to make sure the vinyl was like, we could do everything possible to make sure that it sounded great.
Sounds like you got the right guy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
All right, so we're all staying up on Thursday night. Is that what I heard? Like everybody's going to be up till midnight on Thursday?
Yes, hopefully. waiting for the full record to hit.
Maybe.
I assume that's how it works, right? I mean, it's the release is on the 11th, so that would be at 12 a.m. on the 11th. Yeah, maybe, unless I don't know what I'm talking about. But yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. The amount of music that we have access to now is sometimes so overwhelming, and so I am a very shy, introverted person. So like the idea of sometimes I can literally talk myself out, like there's too much music. No one needs to hear my songs, you know, and he's always like, yeah, just put it out there. You should. And I have to just push myself. But
it's
overwhelming.
Everybody, I mean, regardless of, you know, where you are in your career or how you feel you are as an artist, you just release your music out there. Like, mail it out, I think is the term I heard. Just mail it out.
Yeah.
And every time you do that, you're going to get better. And the point is just to keep pushing on. So, And this record is awesome. So
yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, well, thanks so much.
You're right. You definitely. I know you've been in it for a while, but this is definitely a foot, you know, forward in the right direction.
Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it was just the right time to do it for sure. Mm. And I feel like they're the right kind of songs for right now too. You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and you know, we didn't talk about this previously, but Greg texted me and said, "Hey man, did you know I'm moving back like next week?" And we hadn't talked in a long time, and I was like, "No, let's grab lunch." And so we met and sat down and ate lunch, and he was like, "Well, let me kind of bring you up to speed on what I'm doing." And he was like, "I need a studio. And I've got work, but I want to start working here." And I was like, "Well, I got a studio."
And was that in June?
Yeah, it was in June. Yeah. And I was like, "I got a studio, and it's the one that you helped design or helped build, like, you know, 15 years ago."
You have a studio, man. Yeah.
And so I was like, so we got that covered. And then Christina and I have literally been false started this record 3 times already in the last 4 years. And, cause we did a track, with Isaac Flynn before he moved to L.A. And that's up on Spotify and iTunes. It's called Nobody. That was actually supposed to be the first single off the record. And then we couldn't keep working on it because he moved and was busy, and that all made sense, and that was the right thing for him to do. But then we tried again with me at the helm of being the producer, and I realized while I was stressing out tracking drums, while I was trying to listen to the string players for everything that you have to listen to while they were tracking, and I was trying to make sure the bass take was good, and I was behind the drum throne, like, and all of a sudden I realized I'm not even thinking about what I'm playing. I'm just mindlessly laying down a beat to make while I'm trying to, in my head, keep track of what everybody else is doing, and that's not going to help. That's not going to support her the right way. And so when Greg was like, well, I can help with that, we had a conference that night. He came over for dinner and he was like, well, Christina wants to make a record. Brandon wants to make the greatest record ever made. I'm not sure this is going to work, especially, you know, with you having been in control of this, if we don't make some changes. And I was like, well, here's what I'm going to bring to the table. Can I play drums? And that's it. Like, you know, like, can I just play drums on the record? And then, and I ended up co-writing with Greg on a lot of the music and bringing my arrangements in and stuff like that. But it took the burden away so that I could focus on doing what I do best. And then she was able to focus on what she does best in his care and, you know, getting comfortable and writing and singing and making the record happen. So it was really like a perfect storm of goodness when he rolled into town.
Nice. It was perfect timing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect storm of goodness.
Cool. Right.
Finding my
Is
footing.
Is that a t-shirt?
Christina Graves. Yeah. Brandon Graves on drums. Yep. Loved having you here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining.
Yeah.
Very fun. Thanks for asking.
Really fun record to listen to, and really appreciate you guys talking to us about it.
Mm. Thanks.
Thanks for the music.
Thank you.
Thanks for the music.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Sure. Thank you guys for having us on. It's really fun to be able to sit and jabber on about about the thing that we love doing the most.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why we like doing this too, because it's really interesting to hear other people's processes, and I think you know, you're excited about your music and being able to share that with people that are also excited and curious, I think is a cool format. So,
It also feels good to hear somebody make an album like this and then hear them say they're nervous to put it out. I'm like, oh, I can put all this garbage I'm doing out.
Yeah. Thank you. That's super kind, and it is nerve wracking, you know, like. It's easy for me to, like, just believe because I believe in her and I believe in the writing and all that sort of stuff. And I can just be a fan of it and have it be a little bit separate. But it is daunting to, you know, like, be sending out those emails all day long sometimes and just desperately wanting somebody to email you back and go, yep, I heard it. It's cool. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
It's a good thing I did my hair.
I'm gonna edit that back into the show.